You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll find out why new technology is helping answer lingering questions about how tornadoes form.
First, every year, the University of Wisconsin Press hands out the Felix Pollack Prize in Poetry and the Brittingham Prize in Poetry. These awards recognize the two best book-length manuscripts of original poetry.
We're joined now by the winner of this year's Brittingham Prize in Poetry, Max Garland, is a retired professor of English literature at UW-Eau Claire and former poet laureate of Wisconsin. Max, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, congratulations, Max. Can you tell us about the award and what it means to have won it?
I suppose it means that the poems will see the light of day, which is what you eventually always want. And you hack away at them and you pile them up and you throw them away and you retrieve them. And then so having the book come out will just sort of increase the chances that maybe something I thought of and said will reach and maybe have meaning to someone else.
And you've said this collection is about a couple of strands, one of them being memory and how memory changes, and another about how hard it is to put a word on something. So how did those two themes come to life in this collection?
I used to think that I used to want to capture things accurately. I think that if I could only retrieve this moment in time, you know, the way it actually happened. And I think maybe it has to do with age or... But I now understand that you're always working on your memory. I mean, memory is a poem in progress, so to speak. And I've lost my ambition for accurately recapturing the past, but I've not lost my desire to sort of shape it into something useful and meaningful.
In a way, does that mean you're capturing it more accurately in a way because you're reflecting the way we actually remember?
Yes, I think so. I think you're seeing it from a different perspective, from a distance of time, and the meaning of it actually changes. And also, you know, it's not as if we experienced something wholly 100% back in the day when it actually happened to us. I mean, we were partly there and we were partly elsewhere.
And looking at the words, I mean, the poet's job is to work with words and to figure out which word will be most evocative of a particular feeling or story. Why is it so hard to pin a word down and make it do what you want it to do?
Because as amazing as language is, experience is not necessarily the same as language. And so there is often a gap between what we feel, what we experience, what we know about ourselves or suspect about ourselves, and the words that we find available to convey that. And that space, that distance, that is the terrain of poetry.
Talking to Max Garland, former poet laureate of Wisconsin, current writer in residence for the city of Eau Claire. Max, I understand you've got an excerpt from the book to read for us?
Yeah, I have a poem. I've just sort of left out a little bit of it, but it's the last poem in the book. But if I read this, it doesn't mean you don't have to buy the book.
You're giving away the ending.
Just because you know how it
Spoiler
is.
Spoiler alert.
Because it could have ended on a lot of other poems. But so here's my dubious proposal. This is the title of the poem. The best things in life are the most expensive. Grass, for instance, which shines with the wet light of morning and lines the bottoms of small baskets and valleys, costing all the way from the center of the sun, photons pinballing their way to the unfurling corona and then smack into the sheen on the face of the grass. And snowfall, which is the bread of heaven, though broken by the time it gets here, but lovely when wind-carved and shattered into spectral bits by low angles of light, and then training the pine branches to balance the snow, all expensive. And music, which took millions of years of birds and wolves and longing to learn. And words that well up and want to be, but nerve is missing and must be hunted up and down the corridors of the spine, separated out from the more plentiful cut-rate words that shine a little, but soon wreck or stick or cease to console. So expensive, hardly less than unaffordable, are the best things. Time and memory and forgetting. Water wearing over rocks that took half the life of the planet to form. And wishing you could hear it all more deeply and longer. And also silence.
Well, Max, thank you. That was beautiful. And what was the name of that poem one more time, please?
The best things in life are the most expensive.
The best things in life are the most expensive. And I sense, I mean, there's a lot going on in that poem, but maybe because I know that you're in Eau Claire and I've been there recently soaking in that landscape, I feel like I'm getting some images hitting me of the natural world. And I'm wondering how you incorporate that into your poetry and into this one in particular.
I think that, I'm within sight of the Chippewa River right now. I live within 2 blocks of the Eau Claire River. And so the cover of this particular book will be a scene of a snowstorm over the Eau Claire River. And I think that, well, living in Wisconsin, you better make some sort of negotiation or peace with the weather, or you're gonna have a long winter, you know. It's something that we have to endure, but hopefully learn to love as well.
There's talk lately about the role of arts and humanities in our culture now, especially with possible major cuts to federal funding for the arts and humanities. As you're watching there from Eau Claire, what's your reaction, Ben?
Well, watching from Eau Claire, which is a town that has sort of revitalized itself, is in the process of revitalizing its downtown based upon the arts, based upon private and public support for the arts, I say that there's a lot at stake here. Also, I think that it should be a matter of common sense that to take money from public education, from public support for the arts, is sort of doing our enemy's job for them. And I don't think we should do that. I think strengthening the amount of wisdom and imagination and creativity in young people and trying to articulate the deepest parts of ourselves is a source of national strength.
And will you be taking, you know, any sort of activism for that, or do you think that your poetry is what speaks to the value of the arts?
Well, I'm quite biased because I grew up in rural Western Kentucky with very little chance of going to college or becoming a poet, or certainly not becoming the poet laureate of Wisconsin. So I benefited from the latter of affordable and free public education. I had an NEA grant. I had Wisconsin arts grants. I wouldn't be here without that. So maybe I'm just saying I'm grateful and somebody gave me a ladder and I don't want to be a part of pulling that ladder up after me.
Can you talk about the value of poetry in our lives a little bit, even for people who aren't aiming to be poets themselves? Can you make the case that we should give it a shot, even if it's something we're not planning to share?
It's not. In a way, it seems alienating and strange, but anyone who's ever had a portion of a lyric of a song that they couldn't get out of their heads, who's ever attended a wedding or a funeral or any kind of ceremony and realized that some of the words seem to capture more than other words. Anyone who's ever felt the difference between who they knew themselves to be inside, what they really felt, and what they were able to say about it, knows what the need for poetry, knows where the impulse for poetry comes from. And my first book was published when I was 45. So I'm very much an advocate of late bloomers. And I would encourage anyone out there to understand that if you're listening to this, it's not too late.
Max, I read that you are reading really long books and writing song lyrics. Maybe it sounds like to get away from the technology that's everywhere. Can you talk about that effort and what you're trying to do?
We're inundated by language, by fragmented language, by sales pitch, by sound bites, by tweets. And that language is meant to wash over us and maybe stir up desire or fear or something. And so I worry about my own concentration. I worry about my own brain and soul. And I want to be able to sustain a thought. And I want to be able to use the capabilities and potentialities of language to do more, instead of just simply consume.
Max, thanks so much for joining us, and congratulations on that award.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
That was Max Garland, former poet laureate of Wisconsin, current writer in residence for the city of Eau Claire. He recently received the Brittingham Prize in Poetry for the book The Word We Used For It.